Desert Talk is back. I've had four cups of coffee and I'm ready to fucking go. Let's do it. Yeah. Wow, what a rockin' intro. So I'm all packed up, just about to hit the road, going to first doing a show in Rancho Mirage at Drink, and then I'm going to Arizona straight from there. I'm all packed up, going to spring training. It's going to be a wild time. Going to get some autographs. Got to see some. Just going to be around baseball, and that's a fun time. I'm sure I'm going to have a lot of stuff to talk about the next time I'm able to record the pod. Which probably going to have to take a bit of a hiatus. It might be 3 weeks before we get another episode. But who knows? Maybe I'll get somebody. I might just record, you know, with shitty audio quality, just record with the microphone on my phone while I'm out standing around getting autographs and shit. It's a risky proposition. You know, you don't want to get distracted. You do have, it's so funny. Like a lot, this is really inside baseball, but a lot of people who probably wouldn't figure this, but like when you're collecting autographs, you have to be on high alert at all times. So, yeah, it might not be a good idea to record a pod while I'm out there. So I'll be back, for sure with another pod in, the first week of March. But yeah, so this is going to be the last one for a little while, potentially, probably. Let's see, in Phoenix, I'm going to be, that's where I'm going to be, just staying in Phoenix proper. And, gonna be all over. Gonna hit up some open mics there. Gonna be potentially performing at the Tempe Improv on February 16th. That's for their New Faces of Comedy show, which is a really transparent euphemism for a bringer show with a lot of people that maybe have never gotten on stage before, but they got 10 people to show up and agree to buy at least two drinks. So that's all that club cares about. But, I mean, they also care about comedy. It's a legendary stage, the Tempe Improv. I've heard nothing but good things. It's a great room. I've never been, but I really would love to, get the chance to perform there. So I'll be there on the 16th, potentially as a, pretty much just on standby as a potential, you know, guest spot. Probably just do a quick five there. Who knows? Maybe they'll have me go long. I don't know. But I'm fucking ready for it. It would be a really cool thing to do. And then on February 26th, I am hoping to get a slot on the, so far I have a tentative agreement to perform there on the New Faces of Comedy show. Which means I have to bring 10 people. So if you happen to be in the Phoenix area, you know, Tempe would be ideal for you. It'd be convenient. Please come. It's free admission, just a two drink minimum. And it doesn't have to be booze. So you can, you know, buy like a $5 Coke or something. I don't know. I'm just assuming that their prices are going to be high for soft drinks, but probably not too bad for alcoholic drinks. You know, it's a comedy club, and lots of comedy clubs have overpriced fucking drinks. You know, like fucking Greenwich Village Comedy Club in New York. Like, I mean, I fucking hate that place. Like, I don't mind performing there, but it is not comfortable to sit in the crowd. Like, they just have you crammed in like sardines there. And like, bear in mind, if you've seen me in person, like, you know, my frame is pretty slender. You know, I'm 5'8", I'm a wiry, you know, 115 pounds, maybe 110, 115, something like that. Definitely not 120. And even I'm uncomfortable there because it's just so fucking close. But their fucking drinks are like they want $9 for an Amstel Light. No, just don't do that. I mean, you know, whatever. Coffee, had a lot of it. But yeah, but you know, with Phoenix prices, they're usually pretty reasonable. So hopefully the Tempe Improv has some reasonable prices. Hopefully you can afford to pay $9 for an Amstel Light. I'm not on that kind of budget. I'm a frugal fuck. Like I've got a, like I'm shutting everything off when I head out. Like I'm shutting off my wireless router because that might add, you know, a couple dollars to my electric bill. You know, I'm fucking running a tight ship here. All right. We are starting this hot. Let's see. What else did I want to talk about? Yeah. Well, so we got, tonight at Drink, it's going to be, I'm going to be opening for my friend Christy Belich, who's a big friend of the pod. One of her best friends, Patrice DeVoe, is going to be headlining. She's a fucking killer. Really cool lady. She's primarily out of Las Vegas, but she's, you know, she and Christy do the road together. She's headlined on the East Coast at a bunch of different spots. If you hear like a little scratching, that's just me, taking a Kleenex to my runny nose. I don't know what's going on here. Probably, I don't know if it's allergies or hopefully it's just allergies. You know, I don't want to fucking get sick when I'm about to embark on this big road trip. And then, I'm going to be in Phoenix for like 2.5 or 3 weeks. It would be really, suboptimal if I got sick. Not great. Let's get those negative thoughts out of here. But yeah, so Patrice is fucking great. She's going to be headlining tonight at Drink. That's going to be sick. And I will try my damnedest not to lock my keys in the car again, because that just fucked me out of a spot last week. Luckily I'm designing the promo posters, for that show. So that sort of buys me, stage time. You know, it's good. It's a good setup. You know, I do my damnedest with the poster and I do my damnedest on stage. It's, you know, that's how you get ahead. You gotta show what else you can bring to the table. It's not just laughs. It's, you know, in my case, I like being a good person. It's good to have a good guy in the comedy scene, you know? Fuck, is that where it ends? No, but like I do graphic design. I do posters and, I designed the logo for this podcast, which I think is one of my better pieces. It was really fucking easy, just through a filter on a photo I took, and found a cool font that fit the desert theme. And, and the fucking color scheme. I actually really love, the logo. Satisfying to look at. Speaking of logos and podcasts, I got an announcement to make. It is not out yet, but I've been working on another podcast called No Qualms with Matthew Maloney, one of the best comics in the Coachella Valley. He and I started a podcast a few weeks ago, and our buddy Asensio Fernandez produces it, and it's great. So we just go over to Asensio's place and we record the shit. And Asensio has got a fucking cool pad, you know. He's got a dartboard, he's a fucking really good artist, and he's got these paintings all over his studio that he did, and so one of them is going to be the backdrop for the No Qualms podcast logo. It's sure to be. So I'm going to be doing the logo for that, throwing the photo into Photoshop, the photo of the painting, going to be putting the going to be digitally editing the painting that Asensio did in Photoshop, which I have on my computer, and I'm going to turn it into the No Qualms podcast logo. So look out for that one. That'll be out probably next week. Don't hold me to it. We've been recording a few episodes. I think we're about three deep now. We're going to be doing that. It's fun. Matthew and I, we still don't really know each other that well, but we engage well in conversation. It's really fun. I'm excited to. It's interesting to get to know somebody though, just from doing a podcast with them. Like the basis for us starting a podcast together was, since Asensio is the best fucking host in the Coachella Valley, we had a party there, just all the comics and one non-comic who was funnier than some of the actual comics. We had a party over there. We had a barbecue a few weeks ago and Matthew and I were drunk. And I was a little high and we were just talking, we were just shooting the shit and we were really vibing. It was great. We were just, fucking just riffing off each other. It was a really good time. So then he was just like, I got no qualms talking with you. And I was thinking like, well, if we start a podcast, that's definitely the name. And then he asked me, do you want to start a podcast? And I was like, dude, yeah. I mean, what do you think we should call it? And then he goes, no qualms. And I was just like, that's exactly what I was thinking. Like, fuck yeah, we're doing this. We got great chemistry. So we're going to be doing that. And I'm all about that chemistry. I fucking love it. I don't know shit about actual scientific chemistry, but interpersonal chemistry, that's my jam. Fucking love it. So he and I, we've been doing that podcast. We recorded our third episode yesterday. We actually got into a very in-depth conversation about the Old Testament. Matthew grew up in a Christian household, upbringing, all that. So he's very well read on the Bible, even though he's a New Testament guy, but New Testament goy, yeah. He still knows his Old Testament shit. And we were on that topic since he just got cast in a play. I forget the name of it. It's like Joseph's technochromatic coat or something. It's a play. People know it. I don't know musicals, but he just got cast in it. So that's how we got on the topic of Old Testament stories. So we're all over the place. It's really fun. As long as we ain't got any qualms with it, we'll be talking about it. So pretty good. It's basically a desert talk between two people, which makes it, it kind of makes it stick on track a little more. This is all over the place. With desert talk, you are inside my ADD brain. With all this coffee, ADHD, but generally speaking, if you listen, you know what it is. I'm all over the fucking place. It's a blast, but I can understand if I get people tuning out. Anyway, just hydrating here constantly. I had something happen this week that was really cool. Everything's just firing on all cylinders for me with everything creative that I'm doing right now. What was it? Yeah. everything that I'm doing, started a new podcast. And on Tuesday, I booked my first show as a booker myself. So I got a couple comics coming in from LA, Travis Clyburn and Katie Young. They did a 12 and 20 minute set, a 20 minute set and 12 minute set respectively, 20 minutes for Travis, the headliner, 12 minutes for Katie, the feature. Had a really good time. I've known Travis for about a year. He used to host, all these open mics at the Fourth Wall in North Hollywood. He's just one of the friendliest, most energetic, just really fucking nice, fucking good comic. And he's exactly the guy I knew would fucking crush at this kind of bar show where we need some energy on stage to captivate the audience. A lot of us Coachella Valley comics, we're just starting out. Travis has 10 years. And he's just got a lot of fucking energy and just a great fucking dude, good stories. So it was just a blast. I got a really nice euphoric feeling. Once the show started, we had Saints and Rebels, a local punk band, open for us, and that's a fucking sick format. You know, have a punk band come on, rev up the crowd, then comedy. You know, we had five locals and then the two, you know, feature and headliner, so seven comics, about an hour's worth of comedy, and then back to the punk band to close it out. It was a fucking blast. We had a really good time, and it was such a cool experience for me. Because I did the poster for the show. We called it the Comedy Pandemic. So I photoshopped Travis's head onto a doctor's body, and then had Katie's face photoshopped onto a nurse that's in a hazmat suit, helping or treating the patient who was our host, Brandon Taylor. And Brandon's got just one of the best smiles, super friendly face. So it was a fucking funny poster. And Travis also has a really wonderful, friendly face. And then I had like a quote bubble, a comic bubble where he's just saying, "Prognosis, totally fucked." It was fantastic. I did a really good job with it, and I'm proud of it. With the poster, the promoting, and the fucking booking. It was a really rewarding experience. That was a show that I fucking put together. And obviously Brandon Taylor, he's the organizer and the main producer of the Tuesday night comedy show at the Red Barn, in Palm Desert. And once I told him, like, hey, I'm go to the Comedy Store every Monday to network with LA comedians, get some people out here who are good, but not, LA good. They're good, but like, they're not able to book, shows that consistently in LA. I really don't know how you can, be a comic in LA and not be super established. But that's the grind. I don't get it. I guess you just have to do a lot of shows like outside LA. A lot of people go to Ontario, Inland Empire, go like south towards San Diego a bit, and up north, Fresno, Sacramento, that shit. So I mean, it works. And then they get the reps in LA. They're surrounded by really good established comics, which, yeah, that's bound to rub off on you. So I get it. LA is not for me though. I gotta live in the desert. Otherwise my creativity gets fucking stifled by that thick, hazy air, and pollution and shit. So, like I've got acne bad enough, but you send me to LA for a day or two and those pores get super clogged. It's not great. But I've just been going out to LA getting and just networking with comics to bring out here, and show them like, hey, you can fucking do good quality time in the desert. Ultimately, I don't care if they don't move here permanently, but I really wouldn't mind it if we had people be like, hey, the desert is way cheaper than LA. We're able to get our reps in. We're able to be a lot freer with what we say. We don't have as many PC Nazis out here, in the Valley. So you can do a lot more experimental shit and try to push the boundaries. And it's okay to cross that line every now and again, out in the desert. We don't cancel people here. You get some shit that sucks, it bombs, like, we'll let you know. But ultimately we're happier to see you just, trying new shit, like fucking get out there, get edgy with it. As long as like, you're not actually inciting hatred and, violence against a particular group of people. Like, yeah, that's fine. And even if you are, if it's clearly a joke, fuck, who was it? We had, I think it was Johnny Rivera. This is one of my favorite up and coming local comics. He's only been doing comedy for 6 months, but he's got a really fucking great he's got a good voice. And I think he's found his voice. Now he just needs to work on the writing and the, you know, and just like fine tuning all the other stuff, maybe hone the voice a little more, but like he's fucking got, he's found his voice somewhat already, at least on stage. And it's super cool. But he did this joke about how, like, you know, genocide's bad, but if you had to pick a group, why not the Amish? And it's not a joke I would make. Like, I'm not into that too much, but he pulled it off in a way that was just sort of, I don't know, like almost reminiscent of Nate Bargatze in a way. Just super, you know, super ignorant, but it was just funny. So I was into it. And you could try shit out here. In LA, there's, once you say the word genocide and I would advocate for a certain group, oh boy, have fun with that one. But fuck, I mean, like I made myself eggs this morning and I put hot sauce on it. I put sriracha on my eggs and I fucking did a sriracha swastika. That was, you know, just as entertainment for myself. I'm Jewish. I had a bar mitzvah. I'm a fucking Holocaust expert. Like, I researched the fuck out of that when I was a kid. I mean, you know, look, I'm nice and everything. I'm a good guy, net positive person, but you know, I've got a dark side. Like, fuck, I'd be lying if I said I didn't sort of get my rocks off to the Holocaust. Like, it's such a, here's the thing about the Holocaust. It's such a fascinating, idea. Like, this was the first genocide in, you know, modern history. And it blew my mind as like a 7-year-old, especially a 7-year-old Jew. I'm just like, wait, so this fucking government got together. It was formed on the basis that people like me, Jews, are fucking everything up. And this guy convinced most of the country, and then all of it by authoritarian means, you know, later on, that it's okay to murder 6 million people just like me. And I was just in awe of that fucking, it's so unfathomable how one guy can just convince a nation to not only elect him as the leader, the chancellor, but to, But like that, it was okay to, you know, fucking rat out people so that they could then get killed. Like that's when I realized that I'm never going to have that kind of influence. I learned it was pretty, it was set in my head pretty early on. Like, I'm like, fuck, I can't compete with Hitler. If I can't be the best influencer of all time, fuck influencing at all. Like, you know, I'm a bit of a perfectionist. And if I can't compete with Hitler, then fuck, I'm screwed. Or not screwed, but I might as well not try and be a guy that influences. I'll just be some fucking guy that says shit and thinks about a lot of stuff. Here we are with Desert Talk. Oh boy, Desert Talk, you know, and the Desert Fox is one of my favorite. He's probably my favorite Nazi of all time because, I think, what was his name? Erwin or Edwin Rommel. But I learned about this guy in my, you know, I was going through my Nazi research phase. And I was just like, wait, so this is a guy, he was just looking out for his country as like the most respected general and military strategist that they had. And it was somehow lost on him that that they were murdering Jews. And like, once he actually saw a concentration camp, he was just like, what the fuck? Why are we doing this? Then Hitler made him he gave him a choice. Either you're going to be, we're going to give you a character assassination and you're going to be sent to the concentration camp yourself, or you can take a cyanide pill and we'll just say that you died honorably. Which kind of showed that, when push came to shove, Hitler was pretty diplomatic. No, but totally riffing here. I mean, I don't know how you could possibly be offended by this. I'm a Jew. There are parts of my family that died in the Holocaust. Like, fuck, I'm here now. I'm making jokes. Get over it. But yeah, it just, but so Erwin Rommel, right? Erwin, Edwin, I'm Googling this. Yep. Erwin Rommel. He was known as the Desert Fox. You know, fucking great strategist, objectively, didn't work, you know, in favor of the American interests, but, you know, and our allied interests as well. Like he, you know, Germany was evil. But anyway, this guy himself as a person, he was pretty all right. Like a net positive Nazi. That's fucking Christ. Anyway, enough about the History Channel. All right. Did not anticipate getting into Nazi talk. Who knows? Maybe I'll get an alt-right following. Wouldn't that be a trip? God, fucking kill myself. That happened. Like, God, no. And I don't even have access to cyanide. I'd have a worse suicide than Rommel, and that's no fun. oh God. Oh, this is really flying off the rails, and we're only 26 minutes in. Christ. Let me go to let me talk a little bit about baseball. This morning, the Houston Astros, again, they're a real favorite of mine on this podcast. If you remember back to when I was talking about the World Series and the playoffs, like back in October, I talked about what a bunch of cunts the Astros were and are, as not as a team. I mean, eventually it came out as a team that, yeah, they're all cunts, but like interpersonally, I know them to be cunts on an individual basis. So, it was just really, this has been a really fun off season for me, as, a spiteful autograph collector / baseball fan. But yeah, this morning the Astros had their press conference where they gave just the worst fucking apology. Like, oh my God, it was bad. It was just so fucking pathetic. Like, Alex Bregman was the first player to apologize, and he's just the smuggest piece of shit. Like, I don't really get why. Like, fuck. But Bregman, he's a smug shithead, and he did this thing with his hands where he just, like, he did the Mr. Burns thing, like, with his, you know, his excellent hands, you know? From The Simpsons, if that reference was somehow lost on you. You know, like he just had all his fingers, you know, pressed up against each other, you know, his right and left hand. It was really unsettling to watch. Like, you could tell this was the worst apology just from body language. Like, it just sucked. And then Jose Altuve got up there and he was just like, you know, I was sorry, you know, it's really been hard. And just like, fuck you guys. Like, the way to apologize for that is not to say, you know, we're the past, and we're moving forward. Like, the way to apologize for that is be like, we get it if you never forgive us. We get it if you're gonna fucking hate our guts for life. If you want to take away the title, if you want to, you know, fucking crucify us and keep us out of the Hall of Fame. We get it. Fucking make it, like, try it a little bit just to see it through the eyes of your actual fans and fucking baseball fans in general. How do they not think that everybody would come out and just skewer them even further after this press conference? It was fucking abominable. And I just felt horrible for Dusty Baker, the newly hired manager, to do the bidding of these guilty fucks. It's ridiculous. Like, the players really should have been punished. I mean, given some sort of reprimanding, you know, maybe not given a ban, but, you know, put them to work, like have them do hard labor and, you know, visit some extra hospitals or like old folks' homes. Wouldn't that be wild? That'd be fucking hilarious. Players in, like Jose Altuve goes to visit dementia patients. Wouldn't that be fucking great? Just like he has to go to a different old folks' home in every city that the team visits. That would put such a fucking, like damper on his day. That would really be justified, and it would be a good way of community outreach to people who won't fucking remember or even know what's going on in the first place. It would be a great position. It would be a better position to put them in than to have them give some shitty, insincere apology. Send them to the old folks' home. Have them, you know, like, just send these people, you know, like they say, Alex Bregman has one of the best swings in baseball. Send him to visit a stroke patient, you know? And then not only that, like tell the patients, like, you know, if they have some wits about them still, you know, have them say, like give them a briefing, be like, all right, these people cheated the fucking game of baseball. And they're going to come visit you. You have to roast them. And like, if they were actually get, you know, like give them cards to read, like as if they're reading like sympathy cards or like, you know, sorry for your loss. Like, so when they open the card, the player would see, oh, it's a card for me. It's a sweet card, you know? It's a sympathy card. It has like a teddy bear on it with balloons or some shit. And then they read, you know, dear Alex Bregman, you're a smug fuck. And then just fucking skewer them. Just have them read it right to them. And especially if they're all strokey and shit, like they probably wouldn't be able to enunciate all the words properly. Oh my God. This is a really fun solo pod. It's a lot of fun when I can channel all my hate for the Houston Astros and somehow my admiration for Nazis. God damn it, I'm like Schwarzenegger. Oh God, it was just so off the rails. But instead they didn't do that, and they just had the Astros apologize in like a fucking press conference at 9:30 a.m. Eastern time. So like nobody wants to be there, but it's like a nice day in Florida. And Jim Crane is also just he's the owner of the Astros, and he's just a, like, fuck every MLB owner. Like, there are very few good ones. So not every MLB owner, but like so many of these owners are just such full of shit. I mean, Tom Ricketts of the Chicago Cubs is probably the worst, considering all the political candidates that he supports and the initiatives that he tries to lobby for. He's that guy's a racist alt-right fuck. I mean, you know, your politics or whatever, but Tom Ricketts is a shitty human being. Jim Crane, in terms of this, like, the more that the Astros open their fucking mouths and come up with any sort of statement, like the more you figure, like it starts at the top. It's trickle down shittiness. Jim Crane is just like, oh, you know, he fucking patted himself on the back. Like after Major League Baseball conducted their investigation and determined that only the leadership of the baseball operations, should be punished, meaning only Jeff Luhnow, the former general manager, and A.J. Hinch, the former field manager, how they were the only two who should be given bans. And then Jim Crane's just fucking patting himself on the back for righteously firing them. Fuck off, dude. You, like, really, what... Who was it? It was Kenneth Lay, the former Enron CEO. I think that was his name. He did the right thing. He fucking drove his car out somewhere in the middle of nowhere and shot himself in the head. Yeah, that's right. I think it was him. But he, you know, he was at the top of a big scam, and then he killed himself. Granted, this is just baseball. It doesn't matter that much, but Jim Crane should at least, I think he should have sold the team. That would have been probably the best thing to do. Like, give it a complete fresh start, because anybody else that he tabs is suspect. And which I think is one of the reasons that he hired Dusty Baker, because Dusty Baker has been a fall guy for many teams as a manager who's, you know, made it to the playoffs many times. And then he loses. He's never won a World Series. And then so then the teams that have hired him in the past fire him. It's fucked. But I don't know. Like, Dusty Baker's just like I guess he's good at taking shit in stride. But I think if like the way the Astros should have been properly punished is, in addition to issuing year-long bans for Luhnow and Hinch, send the players to nursing homes in every city that they visit on the road, as well as Jim Crane being forced to sell the team. That's the only way that you make up for it. I agree. They shouldn't vacate the World Series title. Shit happens. That's fine. But to just go on and like have a couple of fall guys and like a slap on the wrist, not even just like a, I mean, they're fined $5 million, which is fucking nothing for a baseball team. It's nothing. But to fire, but just to have two fall guys and then these shitty, like really weak penalties, it's not enough. You should, if you want to properly have retribution on behalf of baseball as a whole and baseball fans, Jim Crane should have been forced to sell the team. That's how you get the shit back on track, and then that's in a way, I think that's a good way to get people, you know, back on like, all right, the Astros are just another team again. They're not these cheating fucks all the time. They know the price they have to pay. They have to experience like 2 hours a day of terminally ill old people. I mean, that's sort of redundant, but you know, like they should be forced into these awkward situations, and then you know what, that actually helps them develop a really good life skill. Talking with old people, like, I'm really good at it. Like, I've been requested to do eulogies. Like, I'm a huge hit with the old folks, so I know that it's a great skill to have. But yeah, you teach player like just by doing it all the time, players will just become numb to it eventually. They'll get used to the idea of talking with old demented people, and it's just a good skill. Like, they'll become better individual people because of it. I think that's I really should have been the arbiter here. Or the arbitrator, whatever it is. I should have been the guy who decided the punishment. I'm really fucking reasonable. but seriously, I am. But that's not what happened. The Astros are still a bunch of fucks, and nobody's going to forgive them. And justly so. Anybody who actually does buy any of that apology, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know. Like, what fucking reality do you live in? Because this is one of the most unifying issues in the country. The Astros are a bunch of fucks. It unites the right and like the alt-right and the far left. Like, we all agree the Astros are a bunch of fucks, and this apology sucked. We're at least all living in that same reality, you know? Fucking Christ. If only I was the commissioner of baseball. Wouldn't God. But of course, the commissioner will work for, he only works for the owners. That's why there is a players union. And that's why the union has to do a bunch of, you know, fucking stunts and being like, oh, well, no, the players can't get punished because we have to do all this posturing just so you won't, you know, run off with all the fucking money like you nor like you would try to do. Like, that's why they don't pay minor league players fucking anything. Like, when I was an intern with the Mets, my salary was $8 an hour as an intern. Not much, but in Savannah, that was enough for me to live on. Like, that was okay, considering all the hours I worked. But the players, they would get their paychecks the same time as me, and they were for less money than $8 an hour, because they are regarded as apprentices apprentices or interns. But I think apprentices is the legal, what do you call it? The legal term, for what they are. And it was just fucking ridiculous. And the reason for that is that the owners are a bunch of greedy fucks. And the Major League Players Union knows that if they tried to bargain on behalf of minor league players, it would make it so much harder for them to bargain for themselves on other issues. So they have to turn a blind eye to it. And it's fucking shitty. It's stupid and politicky, but then, and this is one of the bills that Tom Ricketts, the Cubs owner, was a huge proponent of, was the Save America's Pastime Act, which is the most fucking antithetical bill name I've ever heard of. It's pretty much the baseball equivalent of No Child Left Behind. It's the baseball equivalent of that. Save America's Pastime Act was something that would permanently designate players as apprentices in a way that would prevent them, or make it really difficult for them to negotiate better salaries. It pretty much makes it up entirely up to the teams, the individual teams, to pay their minor league players however much they want. They could legally pay them nothing. Obviously, they're not going to do that because they need the players to you know, still be alive to play the games. But it's such a shitty thing for player development. It's a huge disservice for baseball. Like, yeah, even if you eat well, you work out, and you're able to live comfortably, baseball is still really fucking hard. But you might as well just improve the quality of life of all these minor leaguers, who most of them, like the vast majority, I think like only 5%, maybe even less, of minor league baseball players ever make it to the majors. So what happens is a lot of minor league players, they never make it to the majors, and they're released by the team. They're forced to, you know, they can't play baseball anymore. But for a lot of them, that's all they fucking know. You know, that's all they know in life. And they have to try to find a regular job and a career. And it's so fucking hard when they've just been training their entire lives only to be baseball players, because that's what their fucking parents taught them. They said, hey, you do all this shit. You be the coach's favorite. Do all the travel ball, play baseball year round. And they're just pumping money, just throwing all this money into their kids' baseball careers as, you know, when they're just kids. They don't learn any other skills. They don't learn how to be regular functioning members of society. All they know is baseball. So it's really not even any fault of the baseball player. In a lot of cases, it's shitty parents with ulterior motives. They want to, you know, they want their kids to buy them a Maserati or some shit. They want to have all this pride and just fucking ego about it. Like, fucking sports parents are the worst. Shitty ones. There are some really great sports parents out there. Look at Curtis Granderson, for example. He's a really rare case of a guy who's educated, a really well-rounded person, and was a great baseball player. He just retired a few weeks ago, but he was one of the best ambassadors for baseball. He's one of the nicest individuals. I've had several experiences meeting him. He's just got such a good head on his shoulders. He was raised right. His parents were educators, and he had some really good sports parents. They were supportive of him overall, and they were great, but they are so far in the minority of it all, because most sports parents are fucking shitty, and they only want it for egotistical reasons. They're just like, knock it out of here, Bobby, and they're just like a kid strikes out, they fucking hit him over the head with a newspaper or some shit. Like, there are so many shitty sports parents out there. I'm just going in a loop, but my point is, the Save America's Pastime Act, it really fucks over the younger generation that was taught nothing but baseball fundamentals, and they're only, baseball minded. So when they're forced to retire, even if they want a job in baseball, it's hard to get one, and it's hard to make a living on one, unless you become, like, again, a really, really small percentage of coaches make good salaries. So it just creates a really shitty uphill battle. It's a detriment to society. And players really should be paid a fair wage and, be able to live a quality life regardless of whether they make it to the majors, where the minimum salary is $550,000. A minor league player will make, in many cases, less than 10 grand a year. But then they get the call to the majors, and they're given a prorated salary of $550,000, which is great for a major league player. But, there is so much more that the individual teams could do. I don't even think the minimum salary in the majors should be decreased. The players are out there. The owners are making, still, I think it's still about like a 55-45 ratio of revenue going to ownership versus the players. If you just give your minor leaguers a living wage, it wouldn't hurt it would actually improve everything. But it's because of these old fucking money addicts that own teams, that minor league players are forced to suffer and eat top ramen, and then also they're forced to eat fucking ramen and then have their ultimate, they're supposed to be professional athletes. You can't fucking be a professional, like a really good athlete, if you're eating like shit. You can't do it. And if you can, just by, through some sheer will, then you're fucking superhuman. But most players, if you eat like garbage and you don't hydrate, and you're just going to fuck up your body, and your career is going to go to shit. Or it would be better if you ate better. You'd be able to get more out of your workouts, and you'd have a healthier mind. You'd be a happier, less depressed person. I mean, we haven't even gotten to the mental illness that plagues, a lot of baseball players. And they don't talk about it, because there is a very fraternal mindset, and it's, every clubhouse pretty much is just a bunch of alpha males, who keep their emotions, maybe not in check, but they, if they're feeling like shit or something, they'll just fucking take it out on others. They don't know, a lot of them don't know how to process, bad feelings. They don't have, there are team psychologists, but, a lot of them don't, a lot of players don't trust that the team psychologist is working in their best interest, and who knows, maybe they're not. There's that part too. So just look at anybody that's in poverty. Their mental health generally is not fantastic. They're constantly wondering, like, fuck, how am I going to survive? And then you put that fucking burden on a guy who's trying to make it in professional baseball, trying to get by, which means outperforming other professional athletes so that they can themselves get bumped up to the next minor league level and eventually the majors. And if they fail to produce, then they get released, just, you know, thrown out, and they got to buy their own plane ticket home. It's fucked. So yeah, all this is just a huge baseball rant that I have. I guess you could call it a socialist rant if you want to, you know, try to be a propaganda pusher, but I think this is just kind of common sense. It's really a way just to invest in baseball. If you actually care about the game, you would agree with me. Anyway, I think that's going to do it for this episode of Desert Talk. Be on the lookout for the No Qualms podcast with Matthew Maloney and myself. Actually, I think it's with Matthew Maloney and me grammatically. But yeah, be on the lookout for that. I'll be at Drink tonight. I'll be in Phoenix, Tempe, all around in the greater Phoenix, Arizona area this coming week. And for the next 3 weeks, till the first week of March, that's when I'm head back to the Mojave. So yeah, that'll do it for this episode of Desert Talk.